You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome to Chasing Perfection, a UConn women's basketball podcast. I'm Daniel Connolly here with Megan Gower. And so we're going to start the show off a little different today. If you haven't heard, there's been this thing going around UConn Twitter called the Hot Sauce Challenge. It started this guy named Brian Jackson. You might know him better as Penfield on Twitter. During UConn men's basketball's game against Marquette, the Huskies were down by a lot in the second half. He said if UConn came back to win, he would take a shot of hot sauce after the game. UConn, surprisingly, came back and won. He took the shot of hot sauce, and the hot sauce challenge has just exponentially grown since then, with pretty much every notable person in the world of UConn taking a shot of hot sauce, from the entire women's basketball team. As you guys would know, President Tom Katsalaeus took one. I've seen the hockey teams done it. Dan Hurley did one. It's been just everywhere the last week or so. And it's also raising money for this organization called the Husky Ticket Project, which raises money to bring youth of Connecticut to UConn basketball, football, soccer, baseball games. So it's a very good cause. It's raised over $60,000 at this point, which is unbelievable. Randy Edsall donated $10,000 as part of it. It's just been really one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen on Twitter to begin with. And today, Chasing Perfection, it's 10:30 in the morning. Me and Megan are going to do our shots of hot sauce right here. So, Megan, what type of hot sauce do you have for us?
It's called Hank's Heat. It's from, I think, somewhere in Jersey. I don't know. I didn't read the ingredients before this morning, and it has habaneros in it, so I'm probably going to die, but it's fine.
Your bottle is, like, way fancier than mine. I just have Baby Ray's buffalo sauce because I don't have another hot sauce in my house, or if I do, I don't know where it is. So this is going to be interesting. I've been dreading this ever since our boss, Aman Kidwai, tagged us and nominated us to do this and woke up with a deep pit in my stomach this morning. So I'm got glasses here, a nice old school.
Mine's a little messed up, but yeah.
I'm also representing my former program. I use that very, very lightly, former program, UConn Women's Soccer. So, also, just before we take our shots, because I'm stalling this as long as I humanly can, if you have any money left over from donating to the UConn Ticket Project, also Husky Ticket Project, sorry, consider donating to a local food bank or something, obviously, because with the pandemic, a lot of people are in need of food, and this is a food-related challenge. So if you can, that would also be a really good donation to another great organization. So, all right, Megan.
All righty.
Let's do this. God, I'm...
All right, that's enough.
Your fault.
This is not going to be enjoyable.
Oh, this is thick. This is really thick.
Yeah, that was my goal. And I was like, I have like eight kinds in my fridge. And I was like, look, all right, I need something that's not that thick. But
Oh, boy. I'm also a really picky eater. So if anyone who knows me knows that this is like my worst nightmare. All right.
All right.
3, 2, 1.
Oh. What a way to start the morning.
That was way too thick. Oh, God.
I'm very much looking forward to literally never doing that again.
Oh, boy. I have a new trigger in Barda. Help me out.
Yeah, I just got coffee. It's one of those days I wish I liked, like, lattes or something, because I just drink black coffee, so I don't know how much that's going to help.
Oh, that was top 5 one of the worst things I've ever done.
Oh.
Yeah, never again.
God bless all of you that are doing that more than once.
Yeah, seriously. So many people on Twitter have been done it like 3 or 4 times. And you will not be convincing me to do it again.
No. Okay, but I would say that was like right about what I expected for terribleness, right?
Yeah. Could have been worse.
I mean, it was just like way thicker than I was ready for. But like once like I started pouring it back, it didn't really go anywhere. And then it took like longer than I expected to swallow it. So all around, very not enjoyable. I'm nominating Shannon Healy, Paul Choma. Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your name, Paul. That's my bad. And Bridget Curran to do this next so that I'm not the only one that gets tortured here.
I'm nominating Allie Wood. She's probably going to kill me, but I'm going to nominate her to do it too.
All right. Well, I think Megan and I are going to take a second to recover here, and then we'll get on with the rest of the show.
I'm just coming in quickly in post-production to mention that if you want to watch the video of us doing the hot sauce challenge, I tweeted it and we'll also embed the video in the article on the UConn blog for this podcast episode. So if you want to check it out, it'll be there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And we're back. Okay, today's not going to be a very fun day. You know that feeling like when you're cold and you drink a warm drink to kind of warm up and you can feel it like go down into your stomach and like start warming you up? That is exactly how I feel with the hot sauce right now, except it's like 10 times slower and I also kind of feel like I'm going to puke.
Yep. I feel like that's a very accurate description of how I feel right now.
Okay, so we are going to power through here and continue on with the show. So bear with us as we attempt not to die live on air. So UConn has a new member of the roster to transition in there. I know we joked about AZ Fudd coming early a couple of months ago. It's not going to be AZ Fudd coming early, but it will be Sailor Poffenbarger. So last Friday, I was laying in bed, actually. Hadn't gotten up yet, and I kind of rolled over to check my phone, and I saw the article that she was coming up to UConn last weekend. So Sailor had been on track to graduate early. In general, she hadn't planned to come early, but with the pandemic, the NCAA giving all athletes an extra year, a free year, essentially her high school season hadn't started. UCLA bringing in one of their top freshmen kind of gave her the idea, and you know, she kind of talked it through with Gino, and now she's coming. So obviously she wasn't on the bench yesterday for UConn's win over Butler. We're recording this on Wednesday. But she has to go through a 10-day quarantine from Sunday. She's now on campus. So hopefully she'll be able to join the team soon. So Megan, what are just your initial thoughts on having a new player join the roster, especially someone like Sailor Poffenbarger?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, obviously it's like kind of unprecedented, not something we've really seen in the past. To me, I feel like I'll be surprised if she really makes her way into the rotation and has much of an impact joining the team for this year, just because, I mean, we're already at, what, it's January 20th. She's a freshman, so she hasn't gotten through, like, most freshmen, but by the time they play their first game, have been through, like, a whole preseason and stuff, and she hasn't had that. So I don't know that it has much of an impact on, like, kind of the rest of this season. I do think, though, it probably gives her a new kind of big leg up going into next year, just because she's already going to have that few months of practice under her belt heading into next season, which should just put her in a better spot as a freshman than she typically would be.
Right. I'm kind of with you there, because if you just think about this freshman class, yeah, it's been a very weird year for them, but they've still been here since basically the beginning of August, late July, the beginning of August, I think is when they started workouts with the team. That's a very long time to get adjusted to living on your own at college, living in an apartment, getting used to the coaching staff, kind of just learning the ins and outs of the program. I know, like when I got to college, it was a very long adjustment period just to kind of get a sense of the campus and what it's like to be a student. She's coming in really with very little buildup to this. Classes started on Tuesday. She only arrived the weekend before. So she hadn't really been, I imagine, mentally preparing for college as most of us do. She's going to be so far behind those other freshmen. And as we always talk about, it's so hard for freshmen to make an impact here at UConn, regardless of who they are. I think, you know, this freshman class is a little bit of an outlier with how successful they've been, especially Paige Beckers. So we saw with Anna Makarot last year how long it took. Olivia Nelson-Adoda obviously has taken a little while to get going. So, yeah, I think approaching it as this just being preparation for Saylor for next season, her true freshman year, I think that's kind of the way to look at it. And then if she does make an impact of some sort, she gets into the rotation, if she gets any good minutes, that's really just a bonus here, because I think, as Gino said, you just can't really put expectations on her in such an unprecedented situation in such a weird time. It's not like she's coming into a normal year. I can't imagine it's easy to be away from your family given everything that's happening in the country. So it's definitely going to be a big adjustment for her. And I think because of that, we should just kind of keep the bar, not even keep the bar anywhere, don't even have a bar for her. Essentially treat it like she's using this year as a walk-on, not a walk-on, a redshirt year where she's just getting the practice experience. And then I think, as you said, she'll be much better prepared coming into next fall than all her fellow freshmen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think she's a top 30 recruit, if I remember right. So, I mean, still obviously a great ad for UConn, but plus coming in with kind of a handful of recruits that are higher ranked than her, I think it just gives her a little bit of a leg up coming into next season, a little more chance to kind of work her way into that roster or that rotation earlier next season than she probably would have had she, you know, just came in the summer as she normally would.
Yeah, especially when you consider that as of now, this is going to be the exact same roster that goes into next year. They're not losing anyone, or they're not projected to lose anyone. So she's going to have to really, I mean, with both AZ Fudd and Caroline Ducharme coming in, there's not a lot of room next year in that backcourt. So I think it's really important for someone like Saylor to get a leg up here and have an advantage, because there's not going to be a whole lot of minutes to go around once those guys come in. Nico Mule, as you'd probably expect, takes a step forward with still Anna Makarot, Page, and Kristen Williams all in the mix too.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't expect we'll see much other than, you know, final couple minutes of Big East games from her this season, but excited to see kind of how she starts off next season and what impact it has there.
For sure. And it gives a little excitement to a part of the season that had gotten pretty boring, because we hadn't seen UConn play in 10 days and they finally got on the court yesterday against Butler. The last team in the Big East, came in with a 1-8 record. It didn't start out great, but ended pretty much as we, I guess, would have expected, a 103-35 win for UConn. Gino shakes up the starting lineup again. So against, who was that, Providence? He takes Anna Makarot out and puts Aaliyah Edwards in, which I know is a switch that we had talked about a little bit. And then yesterday, Aaliyah Edwards goes out and Aubrey Griffin gets her first career start. And she looked pretty good. So what did you think of the lineup change and Aubrey Griffin's performance?
I think obviously Aubrey had another great game. We saw a really good game from her in that Providence game, kind of the first good game we saw from her all season. And then she followed it up with another really strong performance against Butler. So I think that was promising to see that Providence game wasn't just kind of like a one-off thing. She seems to be kind of now two games playing at that level. In terms of the starting lineup, I'm kind of curious if it's about like the size a little bit, or just, well, not that Aubrey's bigger, but she plays bigger, because so I think the first time they did it was against Providence, which was right after the Baylor game, which makes you wonder if maybe that was the starting lineup that Gina would have used against Baylor, which is a team with some more size. And then they used Aubrey against Butler here going into a game against Tennessee on Thursday, which is another team with some size. So I wonder if he's kind of playing with that lineup a bit to figure out when you've got a better team on the schedule that can compete inside a little bit more, putting in kind of a player that can play a little bit more in the front court versus Anna, who's more of a guard.
Yeah, I think it's also, I mean, Gino said that he's not really sold on whoever's in that fifth starting spot because the other four he said are pretty locked in. I think some of it, I mean, he said this after the game about Aubrey.
We're a slow starting team, huh? You can see we're a team that takes a little bit of time to get our momentum going. And Aubrey's the same way. You know, it takes a little bit of time, but when Aubrey gets it going, as you saw, she gets into a nice flow and she just impacts the game in so many ways. As I said, I don't know that there's anyone, you know, right now that you would say, well, that's your best starting five. I think, you know, we've tried to go a lot of different directions, but I thought Aubrey had another great game tonight. You know, I thought she did a lot of really good things.
But then I wonder if some of it is also just a reward for Aubrey Griffin for the way that maybe she's been playing in practice, because it is two games that she's played well in a row, especially considering she hadn't really played that well in the first games before that Providence game. She had been kind of quiet. I feel like muted is the right word. And now that she's like kind of seemed to have broken out, she's a different player than she was as a freshman. Whereas I think her MO her freshman year was she was going to offensive rebound a ton. She was going to play good defense. And occasionally she was going to slash to the rim. I think she's not significantly more developed, but you can definitely see some changes where UConn's going to her in the post in the flow of the offense, and she's taking it to the rim and going. She's tried a couple jump shots, which we saw a little bit last year, but it wasn't anything very consistent. And they're pretty much just throwing her out there to full court press the other team every single time she's on the floor. So it seems like they're adding her responsibility and she's kind of stepping up to that level. So I would be a little surprised if she wasn't in the starting lineup again against Tennessee, especially when you consider how well she played against Tennessee last year. And obviously, I don't think an opponent really makes a huge amount of difference, but you know, there is that precedent last year and she just totally blew up that Tennessee game where there are moments where the Vols just couldn't do anything on offense and they just started throwing passes out of bounds because they were expecting Aubrey Griffin to be there. If she can have that type of impact on defense again against Tennessee and also contribute the way she's been contributing on offense, I mean, back-to-back games with double figures and scoring, and then she has her first double-double of the season last year, third of her career. And when you consider that her two double-doubles last year were these huge breakout performances with, I think it was 25 and 12 maybe against Seton Hall, and then 16 rebounds and 15 points against Temple, that wasn't what her performance was yesterday. And I think it is a good sign that she can still get a double-double without kind of having to go to that high, high peak. She can play a good game. I don't think she was UConn's best player yesterday, which isn't a bad thing, but it's just good that she can play a medium game and can two games in a row consistently play a medium game. Whereas before, Aubrey always seemed to either be way up or way down. So finding that middle ground is really good to see from her.
Yeah, great. And then to add to that, I mean, she had that double-double and just like under 23 minutes on the floor. So just really another impressive game from her. I think we saw her do a lot of what she normally does, right? Crashing the offensive glass, mm-hmm. getting steals, disrupting the defense. But like you said, I think now two games in a row, we've seen that her offensive skill set has definitely developed from last year as well. So I think obviously it makes sense that she would probably be in that starting lineup on Thursday against Tennessee as well. And hopefully she'll have another performance like that.
Another good performance I think there was to see was Kristen Williams. So obviously, we made a lot about her scoreless performance against Providence and the way that Gino essentially benched her. But she didn't have her best game of the season, I didn't think, last year, but she played well. She had 17 points. She didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but she did a lot of the other things away from the ball, rebounding, playing good defense. And that was something Gino pointed out after the game.
For the longest time, Kristen wanted to be really good at scoring and really wasn't that concerned with anything else. So these last two or three days, Kristen's concerned more about, I want to be a better defender. I want to get more loose balls. I want to get more deflections. You know, I want to be a better, you know, I want to be better in transition, running the floor, whatever the case may be. And the focus has not been, I got to make shots. That's usually when you start making shots.
And I think it's just kind of a good sign of her development. And he also mentioned that these were her best practices that she's been at since she's been at UConn. So I think it is good to see that she's changing in practice, and you're also coming through and seeing the difference in the games.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, she didn't shoot the ball great last night, but I think the thing that just stood out to me so much is we've talked about it a lot, how we just expect more from her, and like she doesn't seem to have this like intensity that we'd expect from Kristen Williams, and I think we saw a little bit of that last night. She kind of took charge on offense, was more assertive on offense. She took more shots than anyone else on the team. Just like looked like she wanted to attack the basket and wanted to score points last night, which I don't think is something we've necessarily seen from her a ton this season. So I think the shots will come. I'm not too worried about the fact that, you know, that first half or so she struggled to actually get the ball to go through the hoop. That part will come. So I think it was just really good to see her kind of step up and be assertive on offense and have a little bit more intensity on the floor.
Yeah, and I think the important part that you mentioned there was that she wanted to go to the basket. We have talked a lot on this podcast, especially recently, about how it just doesn't look like she's trying to take the lead and is wanting to be the go-to player on this team. But you could definitely see that in the first half, especially when someone like Paige Beckers wasn't necessarily on her game early. And then you had Avina Westbrook playing well and also Olivia Nelson-Adota, but it still felt like Kristen was the number one option every time down the floor. And I don't think we've seen that a whole lot really in her career, maybe besides that Notre Dame game. It's been few and far between at the very least. So it is promising that she has that aggression, and hopefully we see it continue into this Tennessee game, because I think that's a pretty good measuring stick. Look, I think UConn really could have thrown out any combination of lineups against this Butler team and they would have won by a pretty healthy margin. It might not have been 68 points, but it would have been very, very comfortable. So it's one of those games that you're not sure how much you can really take out of it just because of how bad Butler was. But at the same time, it's better to see them doing it against a bad team than not doing it at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I think especially coming off that Providence game where, I mean, Providence isn't a good team either, but she struggled a lot. She was benched for a while, just didn't have a good game. To see her kind of come back from that performance, even though it was, you know, 10 days ago, that I feel like there was still definitely some, you know, probably memory of that in her mind, because she came out with a lot more intensity than we've seen. And I think that was really positive to see.
For sure. So another junior to talk about, Olivia Nelson-Adota, also didn't play great against Providence. I think she was a little better, but didn't play a whole lot. Gino also pretty much put her on the bench too. She bounced back for I guess now we only consider it a solid game for her, which I think is pretty good progress. She had 18 points, 7 for 9 from the field. She did only have 3 rebounds, which I think is a little concerning. You probably want her to be grabbing more rebounds, but that's nitpicking a little bit. So what did you think of Liv's performance? It's just a good sign that I think back to her performance and go, 18 points, 7 for 9 shooting. She was all right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think following up on that Providence game, right, she definitely had a better night, the type of nights that we've been coming accustomed to seeing from her. So I think that's important. Like you said, the rebound's a little concerning, but I don't take too much stock in that just because we've been off for 10 days. Like, things are probably a little bit off. She only played 20 minutes. She'll probably have more than 3 rebounds, but I'm not too worried about that piece. So I think, yeah, a solid night for her. We're going to talk about Tennessee in a little bit, so I won't get into it. But I think that looking forward to that, I mean, that's the most important thing to talk about with that Tennessee game, is does Olivia then put that up against Tennessee? Because I think putting it up against Butler and these other big teams, East teams, is one thing. But can she do it against a team like Tennessee is another thing.
As we spoke about at length last week, there's just been no measuring stick for her. And I think both these last two games are a little misleading in what we saw, just because they were coming off 10 plus day layoffs in both of them. So I don't think it's really fair to judge anyone based on a performance after being off that long, just because, I mean, it's weird to say, because the offense scored 103 points, but at least in my opinion, it didn't really look like a well-oiled machine as we've sometimes seen UConn offenses look. At times I felt like they had to drag it out a little bit and to a certain degree grind a little bit for points, which again, sounds really weird to say with 103 points, but it wasn't their easiest
performance of the year, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Does I would agree sense? With that. Yeah, it makes sense to me. I think we saw, especially when they had to play in the half court, that the offense looked a little stagnant at times and they struggled. I think a lot of why they got up to that 103 points is that Butler had 32 turnovers, which UConn was able to kind of turn into a lot of transition points. And of course, I mean, UConn teams always love to run the floor, right? They're kind of score in transition. So that makes it really easy for them to rack up the score and get to that 103 points. But I do think what you said about, you know, the offense when they had to play in the half court and couldn't just like steal the ball and take it down the court did look a little stagnant at times and not as well-oiled machine as it could, but they also haven't played in 10 days. So I don't know that that's anything to be all that concerned about. It's probably a good tune-up game before Thursday.
Right. And if there is someone whose performance I think has been kind of steadily rising despite these long layoffs, it's Alina Westbrook. I think yesterday, at least from the eye test alone, was probably her best game of the year just because she looked like she played with a lot of confidence. She was aggressive going to the basket. She seemed to have that edge that we've heard about where she wasn't afraid to go and go straight at a defender and draw a foul or beat someone off the dribble. And she was just very solid all around. And, you know, it wasn't the most points she scored at UConn, but it was still a very, very good performance, I thought. And the fact that she went 6 of 7 from the floor is just another very good sign. And I think she was even playing point guard a little bit. So I think her development has been a very underrated part of the season. And I have to expect that. I mean, we're only, what, 8-9 games into the season? That's not a whole lot of time in the grand scheme of a normal year, especially with her coming off such an incredibly long layoff from playing competitive basketball. So I think we can really expect her to only get better and better as the season goes on. And we're definitely seeing that. I mean, outside of those first three games, she scored double figures in every single game since then.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought she was really impressive last night. Obviously, everything you said about her offensive performance, but then on the defensive end as well, I think she just looked really locked in. She had a good intensity about her. I mean, of course, it's Butler, so there's a grain of salt to that, but she was just very focused on defense, really good one-on-one defense. And then she had a couple, or I guess three blocks as well. So just a good performance on the defensive end. I think it was the first quarter she had that one block where she was battling with the girl underneath the basket and she just like got this look on her face when she blocked the ball. It was just a different kind of edge I think that anyone else on this UConn team has, and it was pretty exciting to see.
That was as hard of a block as I can remember covering. Like that was, what's that commercial that has Mutombo like blocking everyone? Do you know which one I'm talking about? It hasn't played in a long time. People are like trying to throw things into various things and Mutombo is there and like completely swatting it. And like he swats it hard. That's what it reminded me of, because she just like cocked back and just sent that ball like to the sideline as hard as she could. And it obviously fired up the entire bench and she got fired up by it. But it was just one of those blocks, like, Liv obviously blocks a million shots, but she's just so tall that she can just get her hand on it and knock it down, which obviously is a smarter way to block it so that you can get the ball back. But there is something very satisfying about just seeing a ball get blocked into the stands.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that. I think that block that Liv had her freshman season in that Notre Dame game where she blocked Marina Mabry, that was like a true of a block. It's like, yeah, it's better if you can keep the ball, but it's just fun to watch someone get blocked like that sometimes.
I think UConn did actually end up with that ball on that play, though, with Mabry. I think, did she block it off the backboard?
Oh, maybe that's what it was. I just remember it being
a ball. All I remember about that play is Mabry sitting on the ground crying for a foul. That was like my main memory of that play, because I think UConn went up the court down the other end. So yeah, that's gotcha. A very good shout out. So this really kind of is Avina Westbrook's week, because obviously she has a good game yesterday. And then Thursday, tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this, UConn's going to Tennessee, which is going to be the first time she returns back to the place she started her college career. And based on some of the things she said on Monday when she met with the media, there's really no love lost between her and her old program.
Have you been texting with anybody down there? Do you still have friends on the team? And are you looking forward to anything?
No.
That's a pretty clear answer from Avina. Like, completely shuts down, just a stern no. From everything we've heard about Avena and everything that the team said about her, she's just very clearly the go-to leader on the team. The team's rallied around her. She's called the team mom. I just have such a hard time believing that Avena was the problem at Tennessee. Maybe she was, and maybe she's grown up a lot since she's been at Tennessee. I just have a very, very hard time seeing that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just think everything we've heard about her since she joined this program, it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Obviously, we have no idea what went on, and there's really been not a lot of information about what did happen. Everyone knows it wasn't good, but that's kind of the extent of it. So I agree. I have a hard time believing that she was the problem, but I think in a way, she's really, you know, probably looking forward to this game and going in there and showing what she can do, because she's been great the last couple of games. So
maybe you have a different opinion, but at least to me, someone who grew up mostly in the post Tennessee era, I mean, the last game was what, 2006 or 2007? So I was only like 8 or 9 when it ended, not to make anyone feel old here, but I remember some of the Tennessee games, and I like had a concept of the rivalry, but it had mostly faded by the time I had really gotten into watching basketball, and UConn in particular. So I don't really feel like there's a whole lot of bad feelings between UConn's roster and Tennessee's roster, the way it used to be, or even the two programs. But with Avena, I think there are bad feelings between those two sides exclusively because of that. I don't think it matters that it's Tennessee. She could have transferred from North Carolina, and I think with the way that this team responds to Avena and follows Avena, they would feel those same negative feelings, I guess, towards Carolina if it was that school. So I think this team is going to be very fired up and ready to play this game, not because it's Tennessee, but just to stick it to Avena's old team more than anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think so much of the old rivalry was that it was Pat versus Gino, and like they were two of the best and still are two of the best coaches to ever do it. They were two of the top teams in the country. And I think without that element to it, the rivalry has just kind of lost some of its appeal. Like it's been a while. Yeah, it's still fun to watch the two teams play, but I just don't think like the animosity of like the old games is there anymore. But I do think it will at least feel like it this year because of Avena, because this team is going to rally behind her. I think she said to SMY on the broadcast after the game yesterday that she knew she was going in there with the best support system. And I think this team is going to obviously want to win this game for Avena. I kind of think they're going to probably put together one of their best performances of the season, just because there's a lot of emotions going into it. And everyone really wants to go out there, I think, and get that win for Avena. And it's going to be a good game. So I think I'm interested to kind of see what that looks like, because I think they're really going to be locked in.
There's also going to be fans at that game, supposedly yes. 8,000 in a 21,000 seat arena, which is just one of the most unbelievable things I have ever heard, considering where we are in the pandemic and considering I feel pretty decently confident that Tennessee is not a mask wearing state, knowing what I know about Tennessee. Although Gino did say that the University of Tennessee is a little more strict than the state of Tennessee, but still, I think it's, I mean, there shouldn't be fans at any games anywhere. Like watching the NFL playoffs this weekend, it's ridiculous that they have any set of fans. Okay, I would understand if maybe you allow the players and coaches' family in, because that's, what, at most 200, 300 people, and you can really spread them out around a stadium. But it's really ridiculous to have these games open to the general public, especially an indoor arena that's pretty close. That's probably like 40% capacity. You shouldn't be having 40% capacity games with where we are in the pandemic right now. Maybe you can convince me that if the numbers are lower in March or something, then yeah, you can do it. But it's just that blew my mind when I found out that they were going to have fans for this game.
Yeah, I agree. It just doesn't seem like the right move. And then you have to imagine that people are a little bit more packed in than like what the true capacity is, because they're probably trying, or at least hope they're trying to protect the players. So they're not going to have people sitting in kind of some of those lower bowl seats that are close to the court, just to make things safer for the players, or at least I hope that's the plan. So Yeah, it's baffling to me. I think part of that is that we live in New England, and I sometimes feel like most of the rest of the country just handles this very differently, but it's looking at the numbers and how they just keep going up, it's really just baffling what they're going to allow fans.
Yeah, well, anyways, to get back on the topic of basketball, so I think pretty easily this is UConn's best test of the season. Tennessee's ranked number 25 in the top 25, and I think this is, at least in my view, this is their first like real top 25 team, because DePaul just doesn't feel like a real opponent to me anymore. They're going to play a weird style that no one else really plays or very few other teams play. UConn's kind of cracked the code. They don't really threaten UConn ever. So that game's almost always a comfortable win, but I think Tennessee is more of a, I guess, standard top 25 team that will be a much better measuring stick for where UConn is, because if they just come out and kick the crap out of Tennessee, I think that doesn't necessarily mean they're one of the best teams in the country, but it at least shows that they're in that top group of teams, even if you haven't competed directly against someone else. So I think it'll just be interesting to see where the two teams stand. And I still also kind of feel like Tennessee could be in, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but Tennessee could just be in the top 25 because they played decently well and they're still Tennessee. Is that the case, or are they an actually good team?
I think they're kind of on the fringe there. They had I think they lost to Georgia last week, but Georgia is a pretty decent team. I think they are actually now ranked. But they've got good wins over Indiana and over Arkansas, so two ranked wins. I think they've been playing well in the SEC, which is, I mean, the Pac-12 was probably the best conference in women's basketball this season, but the SEC is a close second. So they've played a handful of, you know, tougher opponents. They've played well in some of those games. I think their biggest problem last year is that they kind of seem to like pretty much solely rely on Renia Davis to get things done on offense. They've opened that up a little bit. They've got Ray Burrell, who's a junior, that's playing really well offensively as well. So they've got a little bit more balanced scoring. I think they're the real deal, a real top 25 team. Like you said, UConn has played DePaul, which is ranked 18th, but UConn knows how to beat DePaul. So I feel like that game, like you said, just, it doesn't feel like a true top 25 game, because you know UConn's going to go out there, control the pace, and be fine. Where this one should give them a real test, and a test against a team that's played a lot of other good teams in the SEC and Indiana in their non-conference schedule. So should be prepared going into this game as well. To me, it's the biggest test that UConn's seen so far. I think the other thing that Tennessee has is size, and a lot of it, almost their entire roster is over 6 feet. I think they have two players that are like under 6 foot, and everyone else is over 6 feet tall. So they've got size. They're going to give Olivia a test inside, which I think is something we clearly have not seen from the Big East. So excited to see how that works out. But I think, I mean, obviously any of the games that have gotten canceled up to this point from non-conference play would have been better measuring sticks, but this will give us a much better idea of where UConn stands in comparison with the rest of the teams.
Yeah, and I think that height thing is probably the biggest thing, because, you know, that's really the, in my view, the biggest question mark on this team. I don't really have a doubt that Paige Beckers, even though she's been a little less than spectacular recently, saying that she scored 13 points and had 5 rebounds and 8 assists yesterday. So that's a pretty good stat line as a freshman, but for Paige Beckers, that's a little below average. And, you know, I still feel pretty good that Kristen Williams is eventually going to get there this season, or eventually, maybe it won't be this season, but we've seen progress from her this season already. I'm pretty confident Avina is going to continue climbing. Liv is just the big question mark on this team. She's such an important centerpiece of the offense when she's on the floor in these Big East games. Can she show that she's stepped up from last season and is a different player and isn't going to be shut down by these teams with size? And, you know, Tennessee might not be Baylor, but I think we're going to see if that Providence game, where Providence actually had some size, was that Providence game just a matter of her coming off a long layoff, or did their size disrupt her a little bit in ways that she wasn't really ready for? So that's what I'm looking forward to. And then also just Aaliyah Edwards, see what she does against these top teams, because I don't think she's really been all that great the last two games. She was kind of quiet yesterday, even though she still finished with 8 points. she just doesn't seem to be at that same level that she was earlier in the season, which is expected for a freshman. I'm not hitting the panic button at all. She still played well for the most part. So it'll be interesting to see what she's like against a better opponent and if she gets more important minutes, because she didn't really seem to play a whole lot in the first half yesterday, especially with Aubrey Griffin on the floor so out so much. So yeah, I'm just very intrigued to see how UConn holds up against that size. But for the most part, it's not like UConn's a small team either. Crystal Dangerfield's not on the roster anymore. She was tiny. For the most part, everyone else is, if not at 6 feet, right around it. I mean, I think, well, besides Autumn, I think Nika's the smallest one on the team at 5'10". But, you know, I think Kristen's 5'11". Avina might be 6 feet flat. Aubrey Griffin's 6'1". Aaliyah, obviously, 6'3". Anna, 6'2", I think. And then Mir's 5'11". So I think UConn, at least size-wise, should be able to match up with them. It'll just be interesting to see if that size disrupts them compared to what they've seen. Because, obviously, the Big East, it's a lot of things, but it's definitely not a big conference size-wise.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's the big thing to watch, right? Does the size disrupt them on offense, especially? I think the trap that they sometimes fall into in the last couple seasons is, like, when they do get disrupted, they start putting up a lot of threes, and like we've seen from this team, they're not the best three-point shooting team, so if they do that, that could get them in some trouble. So I think the biggest thing for me is seeing, even if that size disrupts them, do they find ways to get around it and to still drive in the lane and scoring inside? Because that's what this team is really good at. They're leading the country in field goal percentage, not because they're a good three-point shooting team, but because they can score a lot of different ways inside. So hopefully they'll continue to do that and find ways to navigate around the size. Like you said, they have the size too. So there's no reason they can't do that. It's not like you've got a 5'5 Crystal Dangerfield trying to score over a 6'1 guard that's guarding her. So hopefully they find ways to get inside and take their threes in the flow of the offense. But if they start putting up a lot of threes because they get frustrated, I think that's going to be a little bit of a problem for them in this one.
You know what, like, really surprised me the other day is yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever I was writing my preview for the Butler game, I went on her hoop stats. UConn is, like, we talked about how they haven't been a great three-point shooting team this year. After the Butler game, they're now 41st in the country from behind the three-point line, which just does not seem right by any stretch of the imagination. And I think Paige Beckers probably has a lot to do with that. I mean, she went 3-for-4 against Butler yesterday and has been shooting over 50% all season long. So still, they're shooting 35.8%, 41st in the country. Just definitely does not seem right.
Yeah, I think part of it is they don't take as many threes. I think at the beginning of the season they took maybe too many, but they've kind of realized that it's not their strong suit necessarily, so they're not taking a ton of three-point attempts per game now, which is probably for the better. So that's probably part of it. But agreed, when I saw that they were 41st and over 35%, I was kind of like, that feels high, but I feel like maybe it's just like the fact that they've kind of figured out that they're not a great three-point shooting team, so it's mostly been Paige, who shoots the ball very well from deep, and then, you know, Avina and Kristen, when it's in the flow of the offense, it makes sense to put up that shot, so a big part of it. But I also find it funny because Jada just always talks about how it's, like, the worst shooting team in the country, and then they're number one in the country in field goal percentage.
Yeah, well, then, like, I'm just looking at the stat sheet now, and I'm thinking that Olivia Nelson-Adota didn't get credited with a three-point shot, but she definitely took a couple from, like, it seemed like she got the ball at the three-point line and then every single time pump faked and took a step in to shoot a deep two. I might be wrong, but, like, just to get a little off topic, I think both of her misses were probably off jump shots instead of down below. Really, from inside, she was 7-for-7 from the floor. But yeah, I think this team, you know, it's not going to be a prolific three-point shooting team. It's not going to be number one in the country like it was last season. But I think it can be a decent three-point shooting team. I don't think there's any reason that it can't be an aspect of the offense without being the number one, especially as we've said with how good it is at getting the ball on the inside. And really, I think the defining thing is going to be if Nelson-Adota and Aaliyah Edwards and Aubrey Griffin kind of show that they can play big inside against taller opponents, and UConn can continue to get the ball inside despite not heavily outsizing their opponents, that's a huge thing for this team, because that's how they can beat these really good teams. Whereas I know last year, Gino said all the time that if their shots didn't fall against good teams, they were going to lose. I don't think that's the case this year. I think UConn can have a bad night shooting from three if they can continue to kind of assert their dominance in the post and not get slowed up by teams with size. And then really what you're getting from three is just not a bonus, but it's just a good contribution on top of that. And then if you have a good 3-point shooting night like they had against Xavier, that really just pushes you over the top. So if they can just be consistent, like I think 35% is a pretty solid number to be at for this team. As long as they continue with that success inside, that's probably, in my view, what's going to drive this team deep into March more so than any other aspect.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think this team needs to be the number one 3-point percentage team in the country. They've got a lot of other strengths. I think being the number one 3-point shooting team in the country last year just masked a lot of the other issues that that team had. And they were able to win games because when you can hit a lot from three, that solves a lot of problems. But like you said, when their shots didn't fall, they lost big games. So I think, yeah, it's a bonus for this team, but they can do so much inside. They're good on the defensive end. They've got a lot of other strengths going for them. So if they just keep shooting at like that 35% clip and take most of their shots inside like they have been, I think they're going to be really good. And then you add that 3-point percentage or a good game of shooting from deep, especially when they're playing, if they play a really good opponent, that's going to give them an extra edge. But I don't think it's something they necessarily need.
So to switch gears a little bit, when you look at the schedule ahead, does this game excite you simply because it's a top 25 team that UConn's finally playing, given all the circumstances that have happened this year? Or is there a part of you that still does have excitement to see UConn play Tennessee, to see that orange floor, to see the just two distinct programs going at each other? Or, like I said, is it just because this is another top 25 team?
Yeah, for me, I think it's just because it's another top 25 team. I mean, I was probably in like middle school when the rivalry ended, so I remember some of it, but I feel like I grew up more on like the Notre Dame rivalry than the Tennessee rivalry watching basketball. I feel like with Pat being gone and then just like Tennessee hasn't been the program that they used to be in the most recent years, it just doesn't carry the same weight. I'm really excited to see this team get an actual test and to play a top 25 team and to like get something of a measuring stick for where they're at, because we haven't gotten that. But yeah, I think that's what it's about. I don't really think the, like, it's Tennessee. It makes a big difference to me.
Right. So I'm asking because Kelly Harper said that she absolutely wants to continue this series. And, you know, Gino has been back and forth. And I know that when the series was originally announced, he said it was exclusively because it was going to be going to a good organization and it was going to go to charity. But other than that, he had no interest in playing Tennessee. But when he was told that Kelly Harper wanted to play, he sounded a much different note.
Not everybody likes to play really good teams. Not everybody likes to do that. So the fact that Kelly wants to do that, I think, is a great thing, and it says a lot about Kelly. Is it possible that we would play Tennessee either next year or the year after, whenever schedule-wise it works for both of us? Yeah, it's really possible. It takes two people that want to do it, and I'm always up for playing anybody, anywhere, anytime. People know me, know that. And if Kelly's up for it, I'm sure it'll happen.
And I wonder if that's has anything to do with just Tennessee administration has really turned over in just the last week. I mean, I don't know if the president stepped down, but I know the athletic director resigned, who Gino was very, very upset at after Avina Westbrook's waiver got denied because they didn't support her waiver. They just didn't oppose it. He's gone. I know there's probably been some other turnover. So I wonder if maybe it's just kind of a respect for what Kelly Harper does, because she's just very different than Pat Summitt. Obviously, she played for Tennessee, so she's still part of that coaching tree in a sense, but I don't really, like, she's just her own person. And I think Gino you can tell has a lot of respect for her. So I wonder if maybe he's willing to play it just, I guess, for the good of the game, the way that it started, as Pat said. So I'll be interested to see if it does continue. I know I get just a little sick of the constant trying to make this game still be relevant when it really isn't. I mean, Gino made the comment that this game didn't sell out in Hartford last year, and it kind of sucks that we're in the circumstances that we are, that we can't see what the Tennessee fan base would do for this game. If they would sell out their arena, what the reaction UConn would get from Tennessee is. But just when that rivalry was at its peak, these two teams just hated each other's guts like nobody else in the country has since. Notre Dame was a very, very competitive rivalry, and both teams wanted to win really badly, but I still don't think there is that just deep-seated hatred between the two teams and the two programs that there was with Tennessee. I mean, that bad blood ran deep with those two programs, and that's never going to come back, and I don't think it really ever should come back, just because it was its own thing. The way I've been thinking about it is, it's like, you know, when you're hanging out with your high school friends for the first time in a while, and maybe you played like high school. I mean, like for my example, because I didn't play basketball in high school, but I played soccer in high school. So you're hanging out with your friends and you're reminiscing about that big win that you had, or that state championship that you won way back 8 years ago when you were in high school. And, oh, it was great and it was fun. And every now and then you look at the photos that you have from it, and you look at your, that one highlight that you have on YouTube from that game, and you think about it now and then, and it's fun. But then it's not something that you'd ever wish to go back to. It happened. It was good that it happened and you enjoyed it, but it's over and you're comfortable knowing that it's over. And there's no reason trying to keep it alive all the time when it's just so clearly met its end. And that just kind of feels like what the Tennessee rivalry is at this point, where it was good while it lasted. It was great for the sport of women's basketball, but it's over. And I think now it's just kind of watering down what that rivalry is by continuing to play these games. I mean, I think these two games are good, but I don't really know if I would be on board to continue it going forward.
Yeah, to me, I mean, it's definitely over, right? Like, that rivalry is never coming back. It's never going to be what it was. So that part of it is over. In terms of playing the games, I mean, I think Kelly Harper has, you know, Tennessee on a track to be a top program in the coming years. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to continue playing those games. I think it's another strong addition to UConn's schedule. I think the issue not so much is continuing to play Tennessee, as just like people harping on this narrative of the rivalry that just doesn't exist anymore. I think you can play those games and not make a big deal out of it all the time about every time it's about the rivalry, like it's gone. I mean, I think it's nostalgic for people that did grow up more on that Tennessee rivalry. I went to the game last year in Hartford with work. We did like a work event for it. And I think people in our office that are a little bit older were very excited to go see them play Tennessee, just for like the nostalgia of playing Tennessee. But I think part of it is just the marketing of it. And it's always marketed as this like rivalry. And if you take that piece out, then it's just another good game on the schedule. So I think you can keep playing the games. I just think that it's time to kind of, I guess, like the first meeting, right? You wanted to keep that, like the rivalry, like is coming back narrative, but like it clearly isn't. So let's just drop that part of the narrative and play the games if we want to play them.
Yeah, and I think that's partially why I just want it to end, because I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where we stop talking about, is the rivalry coming back? I think that every single time they play, that will always be a narrative, no matter how many years. I mean, it's been 15 years since UConn played at Tennessee. That is an impossibly long time. So many things have happened in that time. It's like unfathomable. UConn still only had how many, 4 national championships at that point? 5? Yeah. Like, it's just such a, yeah, 5. It's just such a long time ago. It's really ancient history in the college basketball world at this point. So I just get sick of having to go through it every single time as a reporter. And Gino's asked about what the rivalry means every single time. And I was joking with someone last night that Gino against Butler moved into second all-time on the women's basketball all-time wins list passing Pat Summitt. And it's, we've literally been talking about this milestone for like 3 weeks now, because first it was Geno's one game away from getting to Pat Summitt's mark, and then Geno's tied Pat Summitt's mark, and now Geno's passed Pat Summitt's mark. And every single time it's the question of, well, what does this mean? And like, yeah, I understand the significance of it because it's Pat Summitt, but at the same time, it feels so much less important. Tara Vanderveer passed her first and is now the number one coach. Like, it just, to me, yes, it's Pat Summitt, and that's obviously significant because of the rivalry. But becoming the second all-time wins leader, that just really, in my opinion, means almost nothing. And until Geno passes Tara Vanderveer, it just doesn't do much for me, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, I mean, part of it about passing Pat is with the rivalry, and I think part of it is just because of who Pat Summitt was and what she did for the Game of Women's basketball. But I agree, now that Tara Vanderveer has already passed her, it's kind of like, okay, now there's this new mark, and when Geno passes that, it's great. I mean, he was pretty sarcastic about it. I mean, he had a lot of nice things to say about it last night too, with regards to his coaching staff and who's been with him the whole time and all. But on SNY last night, he was kind of just like, yeah, I'd wake up in the morning, like, or woke up one morning one day and was like, yeah, I want to be the second best. Like, it's just, it's kind of like a silly milestone at this point. Like, I 100% understand the significance of passing Pat Summitt, but now it's like there's a new mark at this point. So I think, you know, I feel like Geno passing her has gotten more attention than Tara Vanderveer passing her, and that's probably just because of the rivalry, but I think really it's been overdone at this point.
There is one cool aspect of it though, I think, and I don't mean this as a negative towards Tara, but it is cool that both Geno and Pat did it at one school and were there the entire time, because that shows you how they built their program. They just built both of these programs. I mean, Pat Summitt literally built the program from nothing. She was the first coach ever there. Geno, obviously there were a few coaches before him, but it wasn't ever remotely close to an okay program. So he's built it to where it is today by himself. And whereas Tara's been at, I think, three different schools. So, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it is just cool that two of the coaches in the top three have only been at one place for the most part. So, yeah, anyways, I'm just happy that he's finally passed it so that we can move on to something else. Although it would have been really funny if, I mean, like, not, I don't know if funny is the right word, but it would have been interesting if just another game got postponed somewhere along the line and Geno ended up passing Pat with the win over Tennessee. But yeah, it's the game before. It's still pretty close. So I think it's still pretty interesting timing. And maybe that's why the last few weeks have gotten delayed so much, just so it could have fit in this time frame.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, the timing is obviously interesting, but I feel like I'm kind of glad that it's happened before that Tennessee game, because I think if it was going to happen at Tennessee game, that's all we'd be talking about after the Tennessee game. And there's so much more to take away from this game, especially now that all these other games have gotten canceled and the storyline with the Vina. So kind of excited to see those things be able to get focused on now that, you know, the passing of Pat's record has come and gone on Tuesday.
Well, since we're talking about Stanford, formerly the number one team in the country, but they lost last week, so they dropped down to number five. And they lost to an unranked team. So, Megan, what did you think of that loss?
Yeah, a really bizarre loss. I mean, Colorado is not a good team. Like, them losing a game in the Pac-12 to me would not be shocking, but them losing that game after they've beaten the likes of Arizona and UCLA and Oregon and all these teams that are kind of at the top of the Pac-12 is definitely surprising. I wonder, I don't know, to me, I feel like they still look like a really good team. I think it's probably just an off game. You also consider the fact that they've basically been like living on the road for like over a month now since where they are in California, and I had a mandate against playing organized sports. So they've been playing on the road, living in different spots and hotels. So at some point they're probably distracted. I don't know. To me, it's like a very bizarre loss. I don't know that it tells us that much about the Stanford team other than that they had a bad night.
Yeah. I also had kind of forgotten that they were not playing on campus, which I think plays a very big factor. That's very tough for anyone to deal with. And also, I think I don't think it says anything about these teams specifically, but I think it just kind of underlines how incredibly consistent UConn is, that I think the last time they lost to an unranked team was 2006. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was Arizona State. Maybe I have the year wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Arizona State, which is just, it was probably St. John's actually.
Yeah.
Before that, I think it might've been Arizona State, but still it's, UConn just so rarely loses games in general, but pretty much all their losses recently have come to teams that were not only top 10, top five. So losing to an unranked team for UConn just seems like such an unfathomable task. And I mean, I guess it's going to eventually happen again, but I wouldn't count on it happening anytime soon. So it was just another one of the many things that makes me just realize how incredible UConn is.
Right. And I feel like that's a stat that gets overlooked sometimes because people really only care about, because they never lose to under teams, so they really only care about these big games. But it's just the like amount of consistency night in and night out it requires to never, in like since 2006 or whatever year it was, and that many years, to never drop a game to an unranked opponent, to have an off night and lose, like, it's just really incredible. It obviously just speaks volumes to Gino and CD and the way they run the program and the amount of intensity and like focus there is every single game, even when, you know, a lot of these, especially when they've been in the American, like, how easy would it be to not focus on one of those opponents because you've got a big opponent coming up and you're just playing East Carolina or whatever and end up dropping a game and they never did it. So I think it's just really remarkable and something that people overlook a little bit.
To be fair, Tulane did take them to the wire. So it was close. If Tulane hit that shot at the end of the game, we might be saying something different. But yeah, I think that Arizona State game might be their last loss to a non-conference opponent that was unranked. There's something to do with that Arizona State game that is still a stat. I just can't pull it off the top of my head. Before we wrap up, I actually want to say something nice about South Carolina. So before I do, head to your bomb shelters, obviously. So this past week, they unveiled a statue of Asia Wilson outside the program, outside the stadium, which is one thing in and of itself. But I saw this quote from Asia Wilson the other day, which I think just really stuck out to me. And I don't know what the right word is, but it just really kind of, to me, underlined how important the statue is. So she said that, quote, "The same campus my grandmother couldn't walk on is the same campus that houses the statue of her granddaughter," which to me is just really, really incredible and is something really, really cool to see.
Yeah, I agree with that. I had seen that quote as well, and it really jumped out at me. And I just think really awesome just to see her get a statue there, to see that, you know, like all these like younger players that look up to her, and like now she's memorialized outside that stadium. I mean, South Carolina's a school that's had success in other sports, but she's the one that's, you know, as a women's basketball player, there's a statue of, and obviously she's made a huge impact in putting that program just on the map and being one of the elite programs in college basketball or women's college basketball now. But I just think it's really awesome to see her honored like that.
Yeah. I think UConn needs more statues too. Obviously Gino and Jim Calhoun both deserve one. I think even D Rowe, who recently died, deserves one as well. It would be cool. Like, you know, Fairfield Way, or if you're not familiar with UConn's campus, Fairfield Way is this pedestrian walkway, like straight through the center of campus, right across the street from Gamble. It'd be really cool to have like various statues all the way down that road. So like maybe you have Gino and Jim Calhoun on either side of that like brickway that they have at the entrance, because obviously I think those two would want to be far apart from each other. And then just as you go down, you get one for like Brianna Stewart, and then one for Chris Smith, and then Rebecca Lobo, Ray Allen, like just as you go down, all these different statues. I think that would be pretty cool. But they need more statues in general somewhere.
Yeah, agreed. There's really no statues on UConn's campus, so they could definitely benefit from doing something like that. I would love to see that, obviously, but you could probably make like a Mount Rushmore of UConn women's players at this point. But I agree that they should take a cue from South Carolina there and add some more statues.
I still can't believe that like they don't actually have anything for Gino yet. Did Jim Calhoun Way get named that after he retired? I thought that was before.
I think it was after he retired, because I think I was in school when it happened. So I think it was like retired. But yeah, so maybe they're waiting for Gino to retire to do anything, but I'm sure as soon as he does, there'll be something quickly in his honor.
Right. Well, and then obviously the tricky part is you can't name like the court after Gino, because obviously that would make Calhoun upset. And like, you can't name one big thing after one of them without doing something for the other one, because obviously they've never been the closest of friends, to put it lightly. So I wonder if maybe, I think it's Hillside, which runs along like Gamble and the field house and like through campus, maybe that one gets named Gino Auriemma Way, and then Jim Calhoun Way goes up past Worth and like through all the stadiums. So they have to do something. I still think that a statue for both of them would be the way to go. Like one on either side of the big atriums at the Worth Champion Center, something like that would be cool. Or maybe in the Worth Champion Center, I don't know, but something.
Yeah, or something around like the alumni building where there's that little like sports museum.
Oh, that's true.
As well, or something. Yeah, but they should do something.
That's a very underrated museum, by the way.
It is, yeah. I've been in it a couple times, and I feel like people just forget or don't even know that it exists. And it's, I mean, obviously UConn has so much sports history, so it's very cool to see.
Yeah, so whenever campus reopens, we both highly recommend going to the sports museum in the alumni building at UConn. Well, we are going to close out the show with a new feature called The Best of Gino. Before we get to that, you can follow Megan on Twitter at Megan Gower. You can follow me on Twitter at Daniel V. Connolly. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show. Tell your friends, read the UConn blog and Store Central. Subscribe to the UConn Women's Basketball Weekly. Megan, anything else?
Just keep wearing a mask and be safe.
And we leave you with the best of Gino from the past 2 weeks.
No. You know, Autumn got a 4-0. So I never got a 4-0. So maybe the players know that, and they wanted, I thought they'd be more interested in listening to somebody that was smarter than them and smarter than me. I mean, she's from Louisiana. And, I mean, they understood half of what she was saying, but they got most of it. 30-some years later, like, take the knife out of my ears, you know. And, somebody made a comment after one of our national championships, which I thought was pretty comical. But the comment was, you know, he only wins the national championship when he has the best players. And I cracked up and I thought, well, I'd hate to try to win a national championship with bad players. I don't know that I would have any success trying to do that. So when you say the kids are back in school, that means they just moved from this part of the couch to that part of the couch and moved their computer. So now they're in class. This chair means they're watching TV and they're hanging out. The chair over here means they're in class. I got mad at her the other day because I said, all you want to do is be on offense. You don't want to play any defense. So I think she was punishing me today. I think she set a record for most fouls in a minute and a half in Connecticut history. So she'll be in the record book.
Wait, we have one more for you. Coach, your hair looks really fluffy and fresh today. What kind of product did you use?
What kind of product did I use?
Yeah.
I actually don't have any product, but I noticed that it was getting really dry. So I thought I would try to use some of your sweat, but I noticed you never sweat because you don't exert yourself defensively at all. So that's probably, it's a lot drier than you think.
Oh man, it looks good. I don't know. Looks good.
Huh?
It looks good.
Well, why are you surprised?
I was just wondering if I could get some of that product in my hair, that's all.
When you get hair as nice as mine, you can have my product.
Okay, thanks, Coach.
Okay, that's what they say in Minneapolis. Okay.